Has a been of the ruin of many poor girls and me. To what my mother said, I'd have been at home today. But I was young and foolish. Oh God, let a rambler lead me astray. Go tell my baby sister, don't do what I have done, but shun that house in New Orleans they call the Rising Sun.
This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC. That, of course, was Joan Baez. My guest this month is Jeffrey Newman, who has a gallery in Hillsdale and will be showing his work at the Millbrook Public Library from February 17 through March 14th. After the interview, Vivaldi's Concerto for Two Mandolins in G Major. And after that, five of the Six Gnossien by Eric Satie. This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC, and I'm here at the Jeffrey Newman Gallery in Hillsdale with the owner, gallerist, and artist Jeffrey Newman. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard.
How long have you been in business here in Hillsdale?
Well, I opened the gallery just as a place to do my own work. My studio is here, and I had some extra room, so I decided I would display my own work. And then that was in 2009. And in 2011, I began inviting other artists to display their work here. So I've been representing other artists since 2011.
And you have local artists?
Primarily. Some of my artists are from as far away as Springfield, Massachusetts, and Cambridge, New York. Don Wins from Cambridge and Leon Comstock from Springfield. But yes, they're all within 100 miles or so.
And you yourself came from Springfield?
I lived in the Springfield area for quite a few years. I lived I went to high school in East Longmeadow, Mass., and then I lived in Springfield on my own later in life. So I have roots in Western Massachusetts, definitely.
And what brought you to Hillsdale?
I had a corporate job for 25 years or so. I was in the fine art paper business, and the company that I was with, Crescent Cardboard Company, opened an office in Lee, Massachusetts, and I was working in Michigan and Ohio as a sales rep, and I got transferred to the Lee headquarters, and I was happy to come back to the Berkshires in Massachusetts.
And so you were selling artist papers?
Yeah, I was a product manager for fine art papers, and I developed a line for Crescent called Crescent Preservation Products, geared toward preserving artwork. And we made paper with it in collaboration with Crane and Company. Crane out of Dalton, Massachusetts, you may know.
A famous company in paper.
They make fine stationery and 100% cotton papers. One of their main items is U.S. currency.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. The Crane makes, they are the exclusive supplier of paper for U.S. currency.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And so the paper that you were, that your company was producing was various kinds of artist paper? I mean, watercolor paper, drawing paper?
At that time, it was museum mounting board, mat board, and it was called Crescent Preservation Products, and I developed the product line working with Crane. Later on, I went with a company called Arche in French, Arches, and they are the world's leading manufacturer of watercolor paper. They're based in Paris, France.
And so you're representing them as well?
I was a product manager, brand manager. I was in charge of the Arche brand in the U.S. and North America, actually. One of the most interesting things I got to do was, this was back in the early 2000s, and Arche, although they were the first digital fine art paper, Arche's watercolor paper was used to make prints at Nash Editions, California. They didn't have a coated digital fine art paper until I came along and developed one with the company and some project chemists, people a lot smarter than I am. We developed a special coating for them.
Coated digital?
Coated fine art paper. We basically took their watercolor paper and put a coating on it to accept pigment-based inks that come out of inkjet printers for what you would call digital fine art printmaking.
I see.
The brand was called Arches Infinity, and it still exists in a different form now. It's called Canson Infinity. The Canson company owned the Arches brand at the time.
Which is another French company.
Related company, yeah.
How long ago did you stop doing that?
2005, I left the corporate world, and I was a little bit at odds at what to do with myself, and so I went back to school. Got my master's degree in art education with the intent of teaching art. So I taught high school art for a brief time. And as folks might know, the art curriculums are being cut back radically in a lot of parts of the country. And Taconic Hills High School, where I taught, was no exception. They cut the art teaching department from 2 art teachers in the high school to 1. So my career there was brief. And that's actually when I opened this gallery in 2009. I sort of by default was forced to do what I really love to do, which is make my own art.
So had you always painted?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always made art. I've sold art my entire life. My first sale was when I was in high school. And throughout my corporate career, I would paint. My travels became a lot of the inspiration and where I got my subject matter. But I painted when I could, after hours and so forth, but I wasn't very prolific, working full time.
And nowadays your subject is mid-20th century style buildings and roadside attractions. Was that always what you were interested in?
Yes. I started out with I thought hard about what I wanted to paint. I went to school at Minneapolis College of Art and Design, and as a fine arts major, one of the things that you hopefully learn in art school is to find your singular voice or your individual mode of expression, what you want to say with your artwork. And having traveled extensively in my youth, I felt that I was sort of uniquely American and uniquely sort of, I responded to the American scene, and a lot of my artistic heroes painted America, like Hopper and Thomas Hart Benton, some of the regionalists who I really admired. So my intent originally was to paint things that I felt were typically American. Over the years, as I kept doing this, I started painting this way in about 1975. And as I kept doing it, it became vanishing America, because I was focusing on the commercial landscape, places where people congregate, places where people eat and drink and gather together. Not unlike Rockwell, a sort of a focus on sort of mainstream Americana, although most of it was not figurative work. But it became a rapidly disappearing part of the American scene because the American landscape, the commercial landscape in particular, seemed to be getting more and more homogenized by the influx of big corporate chains and,
Also, even I think the interstate highway system.
The interstate highway system, it was the death knell of the two lanes. And the two lane highways are what interested me. What happened along the two lane highways of America, where people, stayed in motels just off the road. And roadside Americana was a big part of my childhood. So that was my focus and still is.
And you grew up in Massachusetts?
Well, not exactly. I was born in Iowa. We moved from there to Albuquerque, New Mexico. My father was a football coach at the time, and he had been coaching football in Iowa with a fellow named Marv Levy. And Marv, as you may know, went on to coach the Kansas City Chiefs, the Buffalo Bills, Super Bowl coach. But at the time, Marv was coaching college football in Iowa, and he got the job coaching football at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. So when I was three, we moved to Albuquerque, and then Marv got the coaching job at University of California in Berkeley. So we moved to California after a few years in Albuquerque. And then as football coaching goes, coaches shuffle their staff, and my father actually was let go and had to find a new gig. And we wound up in Roswell, New Mexico, where Dad was athletic director and head football coach at New Mexico Military Institute. So from Iowa to Albuquerque to California, back to New Mexico, and then eventually, when I was about 13, we wound up in Springfield, Massachusetts, where Pop took a job at Springfield College.
And since then, you've gone back to the Southwest to find subjects for your paintings.
I try to go back as every chance I get. It's kind of where I became aware of the world and where my roots are, and I feel more identified with that part of the world. I don't know if it's just nostalgia for the good old days or whatever, but I tend to gravitate towards the southwestern landscape.
And so you'll go down there with a camera?
Yes. My work is based on my photographs. I'm a realist painter. I'm a studio painter. And I usually don't, because of the limitations of my style of realism, I'm not a plein air guy. I paint really sort of complex subject matter, highly detailed in most cases. And this is stuff that I work up in the studio, and I base it on my photographs. Although my aim is not to make a copy of my photograph, my aim is to make a painting.
And you also produce the photographs as fine art?
No. I made a conscious decision not to get into fine art photography, only because I was never happy with my photographs. That's why I began painting. I can paint a given scene and imbue a lot more psychological import into it through painting, and I can also change things that I wasn't happy with if I want to adjust the composition or the lighting to create a particular mood. I always felt that painting was a much more expressive medium than photography, but this was all before Photoshop. Now with Photoshop, you can do all the things that I used to do in painting that I wasn't able to do initially with photography. So I just think that the cardinal rule of marketing, and I am in business, I'm an artist, but I'm also a businessman, and the cardinal rule of marketing, from what I've learned, is one name, one concept. And if you're going to become known for something, it's usually smarter to focus on one thing. And I didn't want to be Jeffrey Newman the painter, Jeffrey Newman the photographer. People get confused. So I focused on the painting, which is what I did better, I think.
Will you go back to the same places?
Sometimes, yeah. I've painted several scenes from the same towns and the same locales. It all just depends on what emotionally triggers my impulse to paint a particular scene, and that is what makes me want to paint something. It's an emotional thing. I want to try to depict things that would make me feel something and respond to a given scene, and hopefully other people will too.
And I notice that sometimes it's a daytime scene and sometimes it's a nighttime scene.
Yeah, although a lot of my work is twilight, sort of the in-between hours are where the light's most interesting. Although I have painted broad daylight and I've painted pitch black night too, but a lot of it falls in between there somewhere. Crepuscular light.
Crepuscular light. And do you take the photograph at that time also? Or
yeah, although sometimes I'll change the lighting intentionally to make it more dramatic, or sometimes the photo might be a little underexposed, so I can, with my paint, I can bring up certain parts and, you know, I can adjust and orchestrate the light in the painting, whereas a photograph, well, formally was difficult to manipulate that way.
Do you produce a lot of paintings?
I'm not prolific. I work slowly. I'm a little bit compulsive about the way I work, and my method of painting is a lot of the work that I do is in oil, and I use a lot of glazing and traditional old master's techniques where one layer has to dry before you paint the next layer on it, and it's a slow process. In today's world, it's agonizingly slow. So if I'm lucky, I can produce a half a dozen good oil paintings in a year and a few watercolors. Watercolors go much more quickly.
And that was what you learned at art school?
Sort of. I went my own way. When I was in art school, my professors were out of the ABEX generation. They were abstract expressionist guys that kind of came into their own in the 60s and the 50s. And they were into abstract expressionism, and they weren't real excited about a kid that wanted to paint realism. So I was always bucking that sort of trend. And what I've learned about painting, I've learned sort of from trial and error and by studying the old masters. And when I was in school, in art school, they didn't teach technique. It was an awful lot of theory, a lot of art history, and a lot of philosophical underpinnings of art. And nobody sat down with me and showed me how to paint a good sky, for example. That was done by my grandfather, who was a painter when I was 14. He was a marine painter, a seascape painter. And he must have thought I had some ability, so he bought me a set of oil paints and sat down with me. And my first paintings in oil were seascapes. And he actually taught me some of the rudiments of technique. And the rest of it I learned on my own just through reading and independent study, I guess you'd say.
Did you go a whole 4 years at art school?
I went to Minneapolis just for 1 year, and then I went to Springfield College, which is a liberal arts college, teaching and with a primary focus on physical education. But they did have an art department. They had a couple of art teachers there, and I was able to go there for free tuition because my father was teaching there. So it made perfect sense. I saved my beans and worked for a year after high school to fund my first year of college to go out to Minneapolis. But the truth is I just ran out of money and I couldn't afford to go to an art school. And my father said, hey, you can go to Springfield College free tuition. And I thought that wasn't a too bad of an idea. And I got a well-rounded liberal arts education and got to take courses in sports skills like archery and bowling and physical fitness and things that you wouldn't get at an art school. And the requirements of Springfield College were much more broad-based than you would ever find at an art school, per se. I actually took the long way through college. I went to work and went in and out of school. I actually wound up graduating in 1981. Graduated from high school in 72, It took me till 81 to get through college, but I enjoyed it.
And you covered a lot of ground along the way.
I did.
Once you decided to add a gallery to the studio, you started looking for artists. How did that all come about?
One of the things I most enjoy about this little spot here in Hillsdale is my opportunity to work with other artists, other talented people that needed a place to show and I thought were deserving of gallery showings. And some of them I've recruited. I personally went out and found them through various means. Joel Griffith I found through a cover that he did for Chronogram. I kind of discovered Ken Young working. He was exhibiting in Hudson at a CCCA, Columbia County Council on the Arts show. And I saw his work there and I said, this guy's really good. And I went I went to him and said, would you be interested in showing? Some of the other artists were longtime friends, and at least one of them found me. And so it's a variety of ways that I've found my artists. But I'm real proud of all the artists that I have here, and I think it's a really, it's a good bunch.
And it's pretty much all representational.
Yeah, that just reflects my taste. I'm not opposed to abstract art. I appreciate a few abstract painters, Clifford Still, for example. But for the most part, abstract expressionist art is not the kind of art that I respond to as well as representational. Representational can involve a whole lot of different styles, but that's just the way it's wound up. If I found an abstract painter that I liked, I would certainly consider showing abstract painters. I'm not dead set against it.
You do show some modern furniture.
Yeah. Joel Mark, and he has a wide variety of pieces here in the gallery that are influenced by Art Deco, a little bit of Scandinavian influence. He works locally here in Hillsdale. He has a shop in Hillsdale, and he makes what we call museum-quality furniture. So that's the applied arts. It's not fine art because there's no psychological intent. It's, you know, it's utilitarian. But it's certainly the finest example
of furniture
making.
That's clearly the work of an artist.
Yeah. You would say Joel is an artisan.
And you also have some silver?
I have a jewelry maker that I represent, Ani Maliki. Ani is based out of Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And she designs beautiful silver pieces with some natural materials. And her designs are all based on nature in some way or another. And that's been very popular, and it's a nice little cash flow generator for the gallery. One thing that I wanted to mention, Richard, was the fact that this gallery, unlike an awful lot of galleries that are trying hard to be avant-garde or trying to out-hip the next gallery down the block, I could care less about pushing the envelope. I don't see that there's any need for me to reinvent the wheel when it comes to representing artists that are on the, quote, cutting edge. I think there's a whole lot of artists that are making really, really good art that aren't necessarily what we call contemporary artists, although all my artists are living and working today, so I call them contemporary artists. But the field of contemporary art, especially in the postmodern world, in what we call postmodern art, there's a whole lot of that out there. And my experience is that most people, unless they are super educated or sophisticated or wannabe, most people find contemporary art leaves them perplexed. And my intent is to make art is to represent artists and to make art and to show art that people can relate to. The average person on the street can come into this gallery and see art that they can appreciate in terms of quality and execution, and hopefully they can understand some of the psychological intent, which is definitely there. I'm not showing just pretty pictures. I'm showing art that means something to the creators and that hopefully will mean something to the person purchasing it. So my focus is on what you might call accessible artwork. It's not that it's unsophisticated, but it doesn't fall into that sort of broad catch-all, which we call contemporary postmodern artwork, which, again, like abstract work, a lot of that work is abstract or conceptual or installation art. I find that an awful lot of that leaves people cold, including me, and I find that it seems to be a contest to see who can be most clever, rather than what I'm showing as artists who they're earnest about what they do. And in a way, what I do is radical. I'm bucking the trend of contemporary art, and I'm exhibiting artists that have worked hard on their craft, and they actually know how to paint. So much of contemporary art doesn't involve that. That's not their concern, I guess. So I'm old school in that sense, but I'm also radical in that I'm showing artists that are also, you know, doing meaningful work. It's just that they don't fall into the category of what you might call postmodern thinking. It's just good work. That's my criteria.
Among the masters, do you have any particular favorite artists?
Oh, tons of them. Yeah, I mean, I've been influenced by so many artists, from the Renaissance guys, you know, Rembrandt, Rubens, Goya. Of course, Goya was way after the Renaissance, but a lot of the Spanish painters I like, and I actually appreciate a lot of the artists throughout history who have created a work that broadened the field. Picasso, you know, people that have done new and innovative things. My personal sort of favorites that have stayed with me a long time are, of course, Hopper, because of what I do and what I paint. There's a few guys working today that I really respect and admire. John Bader. John Bader is a heck of a nice guy. I've had the pleasure of meeting him and becoming friends with him. And he inspired me back in the 70s when I first saw his paintings of diners. And then the whole photorealist movement with Ralph Goings and Richard Estes and those guys. There's a painter named Lyndon Frederick, who works out of Maine, who I think is really good. Guy out in Texas, Rod Penner. And these are some names that people might not know as household words. But there are quite a few painters out there working today that I think are really good, including the ones that I have in my gallery.
And do you have changing shows, or how do you organize?
Yeah, I change the exhibits here every couple of months. Because Hillsdale is not in a high traffic area, there's not a lot of people coming through the gallery typically. So I like to leave the show up to do justice to the artist for at least a couple of months to give enough people a chance to have seen the work. I have group shows from time to time, as what I'm doing now. And then I will feature a certain artist in a solo show or an individual show more in the spring and summer months when it's a little busier and a little bit better time for people to see the work. I usually keep some work by all of my artists up at all times. So say if somebody wanted to see a Ken Young piece, or if they wanted to see something by Margot Trout, I represent these artists and there's always something here, one or two pieces, even if I'm having a featured show on a particular artist.
You work in the studio space pretty much every day?
When the gallery is open and when I don't have people in the gallery, my studio is here, so fortunately I'm not just waiting for someone to walk through the door. So the back part of the gallery is where we're sitting now, which is my studio. I don't have the luxury of north light, but I paint with color-corrected fluorescent light, and it's a nice space for me to work, and I feel really lucky just to have a space that's heated and big enough for me to make what I make here.
Picasso said he much preferred artificial light.
It's interesting because most people will display the work. If you purchase some art, inevitably it's going to go in a home that's going to be lit by tungsten lighting. And, you know, north light is ideal, and it is very forgiving and very neutral, but it's not, certainly not necessary. painters have painted in garrets by candlelight, you know. I mean, it's I'd love to have the luxury of a big clear story window, but I just don't.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's kind of interesting to be on the radio talking about art, because with no pictures, it's kind of hard to imagine what I do. I wish that I could have pictures go with my words, because it would be much more meaningful. I would like to give a plug, though, to my website, where you can see the work by all of the 8 other artists that I represent besides myself, and that is www.neumannfineart.com.
That's N-E-U-M-A-N-N?
Correct. That's a tricky part. N-E-U-M-A-N-N. It's a Deutsch. Go to the website if you're wondering what it is I do, and people will have a much more clear picture of what Neumann Fine Art is all about.
And when you're in Hillsdale, stop by.
Please, yes, stop by and see me in Hillsdale. I'm open Thursday through Sunday, 11 to 4.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you.
That was Antonio Vivaldi's Concerto for Two Mandolins in G Major. Now, Eric Satie, Six Gnossien.
Thank you.